10:10.
I'm ready to go, Commissioner.
Okay, all right. Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting for a work session today. It is, what is today, Thursday, July 12th. We're looking for a work session on case number PU 13-871, MDU and Menard Incorporated, a PC&N request. We've had one work session on this. This will be our second. It is Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio. I don't have any opening comments other than I've had a chance to review the information. I'm leaning a certain way, but I'm looking forward to my colleagues' discussions. So, Mr. Crisp, anything before we turn it over to the portfolio holder?
No, I also have no opening comments.
Okay. All right, Julie, right to you.
Okay. Well, we've gone through our chart and worked through the various criteria that we are to use in making this determination. And the chart didn't provide any, obvious choice. So unless my colleagues have a lot that they want to discuss this morning, I've been reviewing the law, and I've pulled some of the old cases that have sort of set the stage, and I really am just today going to ask for some more time because I want to look through the cases more in depth, and I don't have a lot to offer today in terms of discussion until I do that.
Okay. Randy, do you have anything? I have a few questions.
I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
And some of these I may have asked last time and either don't remember the answers or didn't get them, one of the two. I'll probably take the blame and say I don't remember. Or that I forgot them. The east side of McKenzie that is kind of platted on the map, but the testimony was that there's really nothing of the community there. Is that community-owned property that one would expect is going to be developed, or is that just something that's platted in there, but the adjacent farmer or rancher owns it and farms it and probably has no intention of selling it? First part of the question is, do we know who owns that? And secondly, is that currently MDU territory, or is that questionable ground too?
I think the testimony in the case from both sides was that eastern half, I'm looking at MDU Exhibit 4, so just saying avenues C and eastward. I believe that was just a farmer's, essentially a field right now, an undeveloped parcel of land. I don't think we had any testimony that it intends to be developed or as to who actually owns that, whether that's one person or a number of persons. But getting to the second question as to whether MDU would have jurisdiction over that, we had kind of talked about that last time. The franchise from MDU or to MDU from the village of McKenzie states that the MDU has the right of way for erection and operation of an electric system, electric distribution and transmission system, over across of certain streets, alleys, highways, and public grounds, which are under the care and supervision of this board. So we have nothing on the record to state that these streets, which are platted, have been vacated. If that's the case, then I believe that the franchise would still extend to that. And that's based on a couple cases I've looked at, some older cases, because we talked about the TIA states outside the corporate limits of a city. This is an unincorporated municipality. However, the franchise predates the TIA, and the previous instances of the TIA, going back to the 1930s, discuss a rural area would be an area not included within the boundaries of any incorporated or unincorporated city, town, village, or borough. So I believe that MDU would still have the legal authority to the duty to serve within you know, avenues C, D, and E in the city, in the village of Mackenzie, based on the laws that are on the books.
Ryan, as a follow-up to that, in their franchise agreement, in the language that was laid out, it spelled out a territory. Did you look more deeply in that? The portion of the civil township of Mackenzie situated on the southeast quarter of Section 29 and the southwest quarter of Section 28.
Yep.
Does that then assume that the entire southwest section of 28 and the entire southeast section of 29 is what's, does that give us a boundary?
That's the interpretation part.
Yeah, that would be an interpretation part, yeah, because...
And you could give your viewpoint, but I think that, to me, that came down to the crutch of my decision, or but where I'm leaning at, quite honestly.
Because there is a, it looks like there's a township road south of well, it looks like the line, according to MDU Exhibit 4, runs along the south boundary of the southwest quarter of 28. And the, you know, there are platted streets within the entire southwest quarter of 28. So I would.
Where do we know those? Where did the platted street comes from? I mean, where did this plat come from?
Well, that, and that's a good question too, because this is just what's plat. I'm not sure where MDU got the maps from that were provided. But if you go to, for example, Google Maps or Google Earth, these will come up, these light gray lines, as a plotted map. Now the question is, where did Google get that information from? Presumably that's the Burleigh County Recorder's Office. That would be, again, that's outside the purview of this case. We don't have any evidence to suggest that that's been vacated, but that would be the indication as to what has been platted within the city or the village.
Let me walk down kind of a similar line, but a little different. If someone wants to move into town, Mackenzie, right now, and they decide to build a house just, you know, a block east of the established town, if you will, of what's built there now, I don't think MDU is coming and asking for a PCNN to serve that. They're just going to serve it because it's a natural extension of where they're at. The fact that they ask for a PCNN in this almost opens the door that they realize it's outside potentially their area. You don't
right.
Ask for a PC, right? It just that whole that's been a set up question for me of like, if it was theirs and they didn't have a question, why didn't they just serve it?
Right, and I don't think that MDU is disputing that this is outside their territory. I think that this kind of goes to the discussion as to the orderly and economic development of the village going forward, and that factor.
But how does a company go through and decide when they're going to ask for that?
I guess that'd be a question.
There's some that just kind of know. And so just the fact that they came, they knew there was enough grayness in this that they wanted, they could see where this would come to us at some point in time. And then the fact that it's not incorporated city, how much does that tie into this whole discussion? Seems pretty big.
I know Jerry and I kind of kicked that idea around. And
should they be asking for a PCNN for it to extend any service in Mackenzie because of this?
I don't think so. Based on the franchise and based on the case law in the state of North Dakota, I don't think they would have to. That's just my interpretation of what I've been researching. However,
within the
village, correct. Within those.
This is not within the village.
Correct.
And there was language you just read to us about either incorporated or not incorporated.
Right.
But the reason I asked about the part that is in the village is, if this were granted, then the two become kind of, I don't know if adjacent is the right term, they touch corners. And so, depending on that answer, is what leads me to my thinking on the next part of it. If this were granted, and I'm going with Ryan's interpretation now that Eastern Mackenzie is MDU's area already, so they touch corners. If nothing else happens, the assumption still is that everything surrounding this would be Capital Electric's, right? If just because MDU would have a block here and a block here, everything around it doesn't necessarily tie in because of orderly economic development, does it?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, then yes. Like everything outside of what would be the platted town site within the southeast of 20, or the southwest of 28, would be capital territory, which is why
this order would clear that up. It would be subject to interpretation every time there's a build outside the established area. Well, you know, whatever we decide in this case, I think they would have the right to come back again later. It's not, if we decide this was MDUs, it doesn't mean that everything else is capitals. I think MDU could make a case in every case.
Okay. Maybe I misunderstood the question then. Yeah, I think that if there was another load going out there, like the hypothetical convenience store we've talked about or whatever, then I think that MDU could apply for a certificate in that situation as well.
My question is right between the two interpretations.
Okay.
I'm understanding it to mean that if this were granted, that then the hypothetical convenience store, if MDU wanted it, they would have to come in again and seek a PCNN. However, the ultimate place that I'm trying to get to with this line of questioning is, do we have precedent then that because we've expanded a PCNN somewhere that it's sort of a automatically approved thing that we've always approved the adjacent requests into, or
no?
I just haven't been here long enough to know whether there's any history that would guide that.
I think that if you give a PCNN for an area for this customer, then they've got facilities in that area. So if another customer comes next to it, they're in a better position to be best able to serve that customer because now they have facilities here that they didn't have before. So you're looking at basically whoever's closest.
So I mean, the answer to Randy's question would then be yes. You said no, but
I said no, it doesn't, I guess, repeat the question.
If you grant this, it doesn't guarantee that the person adjacent to this next time will get it, but it makes it more likely.
It improves their chances of getting a PCNN for the next load next to it because they're closer to that load now. Okay. And so a lot of times you'll find a cooperative will object to them extending service because of the way we look at whoever's closest, and they just don't want the like MDU in their area, because then next time they're afraid if something comes into that area that MDU has a better case for serving it.
You know, you look through, just yesterday we voted on a service area agreement, and you look at the lines around towns, there's a lot of places where these, all throughout the state where these companies touch, and all co-op touches and investor owned. And so I still go back to, I think they could have worked this out. But they didn't. And so go back to our previous discussion. Can you walk me through again how it appeared to me that Capital had better facilities in place than MDU with that transformer discussion? Because MDU, I saw some things that tipped their way, but that was a big one. It looked like to me there might be a duplication of service because MDU had to add in more things than Capital.
As I was saying, I thought that was one of the key issues in this case, was that Capital upgraded their sub a couple years back, and now they have capacity from that substation to serve this load already. If MDU's sub is going to serve it, they have to change out the transformer to add additional capacity to that substation.
Because when I went back and looked after we talked before, I kind of came to that same thought too. And so to me, that's why I said earlier, that's kind of where I'm at right now. But there are definitely some things that are an MDU's advantage too, but that's a big one for me, how that services are there.
And it's not really fair to not finish that discussion, though. And MDU would contend that the upgrade to that substation
for McKenzie, they're gonna
improves their service to the community of McKenzie, and so it's not wasteful.
Right.
Jerry, can you... I have scratched in my notes from, I believe it was Lars's testimony, the capacity at the Capital substation, which I believe is in Monocan. Do you have the details? I have scratched out here that it's a 5,000 kilovolt sub, and they have, I can't tell if it's either 2,200 available or 1,200 consumed. I'd like to get a better sense of the total capacity available at that sub.
I'd have to go back and review it, but it seemed to me that the load was like a little over a megawatt. And I'm thinking that the sub capacity was somewhere like 2 or 3 or 4 or something like that. I'll have to go back and look for the number on the sub, on the co-op sub. The ILU sub was less than what they needed for the for that load.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that for you.
Okay. So you'd give me the capacity at the sub and how much they this load would
about.
Consume. Yeah. And for both, too, if you can get the capacity, the new capacity that MDU would have and how much this Menards project would consume.
For either Jerry or Ryan or the... Clearly, the customer wants MDU. They came and testified to that. But I thought I heard during their hearing that they didn't even realize when they picked the site, they had no idea there was two providers. So to me, of course they're going to want the lowest cost. But that wasn't even anywhere in their decision factors. Like we picked the spot, hey, then we realized there was two people that could give us power. So of course you're going to go to the lowest one. And the whole idea of rate shopping, I think, is not what the design of an investor-owned in a co-op is. So it, to me, it kind of mitigates that point. If they would have come in and said, hey, listen, we looked at all this thing and we figured in our cost analysis that we needed the lower cost rate, or we needed this rate to help make the project pencil out, but the witness admitted he didn't even realize there was two. So how would you view that as an offset, if you will, to the customer preference, or is the customer preference a customer preference?
I think I'm trying to recall because I remember they requested current rates from both companies. So at some point, they obviously knew there was another company.
After they'd made the deselection criteria.
Yeah.
Or during it, I think is your point.
Yeah, probably a horse apiece there. And,
okay.
Another thing, too, just to keep in mind, is the... You know, the Public Service Commission, regulation serves as a substitute for competition.
Right.
And so here you have an instance where a customer potentially had the opportunity to choose between two competing providers. So that would be my thought, is just if this was a pure free market world and there wasn't any regulation because there was competition, then we would be granting, preference to the customer in these situations. So that's just throw that out there to think. That would be how I would address that issue or look at
it. The idea that you regulate investor owns means that, I guess this whole rate shopping thing is popping up around the state, and I don't like it.
Sure.
You've got Otter Tail that went in and I will say took load away from North Central, clearly in a North Central area in my mind. But in that case, it was unanimous that we ruled that the commission had no jurisdiction on tribal land. But it still, I thought it was a really bad idea. And so now I've got a case where, of course, they're going to pick the lowest cost, but there's a reason that a co-op's costs are going to be more than an investor-owned. They got more ground to cover. So I'm really hung up on that point where I know that the code says the customer preference is big, but it's just this whole setup of getting into a bidding war between investor-owns and co-ops in North Dakota. You know, what's next? We have every investor-owned trying to go out and serve tribal land? I mean, where does it stop?
And if you recall, too, in that North Central Otter Tail case,
that's right, you did that one, and you appealed, didn't you?
Right. The court and the commission definitely couched the customer preference, and the courts have long said in North Dakota, customer preference is not controlling.
Okay.
From a legal standpoint in the courts, that is also...
So we could reference that in this case if that's where... we end up, or okay. But is there any one factor that's more controlling over the other in any of these? There's not really, is there?
Not really.
No. Okay.
Well, the wasteful duplication. Mm-hmm.
Back to
that
my
would
Transformers
be the
question.
Wasteful
duplication is probably the big thing that the courts have hit on.
Okay. Fair enough.
Done with that avenue?
I'm done with that avenue, sir.
Okay. I have another engineering one. Or mathematics. I don't know which it is.
It's all the same.
I'm looking at the two orders, and I'm wondering if what I missed in the testimony, because I can't figure out how to get these two together. On the Capital Electric order, on page 6, it's item number 17. Capital Electric has reported 4 outages in a 6-year time frame, and MDU has reported 5 outages in a 15-year time frame. So I do the math, and I see Capital Electric about 1 every 18 months, and MDU about 1 every 36 months. And so I guess I could see one doing the math and saying it's either 50% or 100%, depending on which is your starting point. Then I look at the MDU order, also on page 6 and number 17, and they have that the Capital Electric's outage rate is nearly 12 times greater than the historic outage rate for MDUs. So I don't know what statistics are being used here or what's a fair way of comparing that, but clearly they're not using the same starting points or measuring sticks, one of the two.
They were using different time periods for their numbers. There's different factors laying into those outage rates. What did they count for an outage? If there was a storm, did they count it? Things like that. The length of the line coming in, how long is it? The longer it is, the more exposure you have. Is it underground? All of those factors. You know, looking at it, MDU's outage on that line from that sub, the line's not very long, but it showed that they had a better outage record than Capital did. But on the other side of that, neither of them had a bad history of outages on that line. They both had good reliable service, I would think, to not call that a factor.
Was this something that we definitely will address in our order? And if so, I mean, we have to figure out what measuring stick we're going to use, because it's not just off by whether you're counting one outage here or there. It's a dramatic difference, 12 times as much to what would look to me like about 12, twice as much.
Well,
wouldn't the basis be
12 times 0.1 is like not much, you know.
But would the basis be, though, no matter where we end up at, that they both can provide reliable service on the standard that the industry provides?
You know, I think that when we draft it, I would draft something along those lines. There were a couple little differences in there that we would point out in there, but I don't think anything enough to sway a decision from that factor.
Have you taken a stab at combining these two?
I have not yet.
Okay.
What's our time frame on this decision again, Jerry? I mean, the sooner the better, of course. Both parties want to know. But I can't remember when they're going to want to be setting up service.
You know, I don't think that we have a time frame on it. I don't remember when the customer...
I have that in my notes here.
...needed the service by, but it was out, and either way, we'll get them construction power and stuff that they need there from somebody.
I believe on the... I believe Capital Electric had provided as an exhibit a application for construction electricity, and that was an August start date of this year, I believe, was the date.
But did we give MDU a temporary authority?
Don't think so.
Did should be.
I think it's just a discussion point, but I don't know, like, Julie, how much time you want to review this stuff, but it's, I guess it'd be good.
We can set another date today. I could, meet next week if we're able to get together.
I don't know that we're missing anything other than just we have to decide.
Right. No, I'm not missing anything. I just want more time to consider the case law.
All right. Randy, do you have any other questions?
Nope. Mine have been asked.
Okay, let me just look through here one more time. Well, I think that was it for me too, Jerry. Okay. Julie, anything else? No?
Do we want to schedule a
Probably,
session?
Yeah, let's Brian, Jerry, do you guys have anything you think we should cover today? Did you have burning questions for the three of us as you go forward? Because I don't think there's any do-outs to either one of you right now is what I'm hearing.
Well, except for he's going to – you were going to
Yeah, I was
going to get capacity. Your station stuff. Yep.
Okay.
Information on it. And the next step for me is to try and – start drafting an order, but it's kind of difficult to, I mean, I can draft this thing either way.
Yeah. Sure. You probably need more direction.
Yeah.
Yep. Understood. Okay. What's your schedule like, Ryan?
Yeah, let's schedule something. That's a good idea. So how quick, Julia?
Next week is pretty tough, but do we have any time?
It's whenever you're ready to
It seems like if it were possible, it would probably be good so we could just keep get it on the 25th meeting.
The 19th or the 20th, what are you guys seeing? I know we've talked about those days a couple times the last 2 days, and it seems like, Brian, you're tied up most of the 19th, right?
I'm in the morning. I'm wide open.
No, I'm tied
up. Oh, you're tied up the 19th. Okay.
Until about 2 or so. I could come in later in the day on the 19th and be back here.
In the morning of the 20th, I'm open. My mornings are good.
I am too.
Yeah, that's the morning. I have a 9, and then we have our 11.
Does that late in the day on Thursday work?
No, why not?
And late on Friday doesn't work either?
Well, we have the Enbridge work session, but I could...
Yeah, I'm good late on Friday.
Be available after that. What's going on in the 20th? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Ryan, does that work for you?
If it's in the afternoon, that would work for me.
So, like, we have Enbridge from 1:30 to 2:30. Could we go at 2:30 on the 20th? Julie, Ryan?
Sure.
Make sure that nobody involved in this case gets to start their weekend early.
That's right. So, Ryan, that's good for you. You're the Jerry?
Yep, I think that works.
Okay, Daryl.
June 20th at 2:30.
2:30 for this case number. That'll be our next work session.
All right, I got it. I'll get Esther to get that.
Okay.
We need to be done by
Monday morning.
Not too late if any of us are going to Senator Wanzik's son's wedding at 4:00 that afternoon.
You tell him or over in
here.
Okay. All right. Well, that gives us an hour and a half. Okay, we'll go ahead and close the work session on case number PU 13-871. Thank you all.